Ken, go ahead.
I'm sure, Maxie, that you're well aware of the Pacifica Employee Handbook, and I'm sure you've looked over the Programmer's Guide and the best practices that are listed in there that are really way, nobody's really complied with even 50% of them at any of the stations, I imagine. So is there any program going on inside of our organization to implement the guidelines to get people to properly report what they're broadcasting and to, you know, fill out the logs and to announce station identification and all of the requirements that are fairly standard and to report any potential conflicts of interest? Are we doing anything managerially to get that implemented?
Well, I would argue that most of that's being handled at the local level. We certainly can do some things at the national level. John Almala often is involved in compliance issues across the network, and he joins me on these PD calls. He joins us on our leadership calls with the PDs and GMs, and so often he's there to help the stations know some of the things they've got to do, like their fast reports to CPB, to some of their FCC documentation that has to be done. He talks about things like that. So we do have some.
Hello?
Hello.
Did we lose you, Maxie?
Yeah, that's pretty touchy.
Houston, we've got a problem.
hello.
He lost himself.
He'll be back.
All right.
I don't know if he brings friends to bring BBC.
Sorry,
with him.
Guys.
I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah. I lost somebody.
Yeah, I knew you'd be back. Okay.
Okay. So I'm sorry. I don't know where I left off. I don't know what you heard last.
Well, you were where you left off, Maxie, was that you're introducing the GM with John Almella to the idea that maybe they ought to consider getting the programmers to do their job. But I'm talking about, is there anything from management to get people to comply, not to think about or consider, and wouldn't it be nice, but to get them to start doing their job properly? Because part of the guidelines is that program directors and general managers will be evaluated on the basis of them getting compliance with the handbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't just have, it's not a social club, it's an organization.
Completely agree. It has not been a point of emphasis for me specifically, but we do, like I said, when we have the conference calls with them, we share with them things that need to be done right away in terms of reports. I think there is an assumption that with competent GMs and PDs that there's at least some adherence to some basic rules of engagement. But you make a valid point. It's something that we'll be putting a lot more attention on now that we've kind of cleared some hurdles. We've got others obviously coming on the road on the way, but I think I made mention months ago that once we got past the election, I thought I'd be in a position to really focus on operations a lot more. That's why we're doing these webinars and these conference calls, and we're going to schedule the webinars biweekly. And in those webinars, we'll be able to address many of the things you're talking about, handbook issues, policy, et cetera, on a regular basis. So, yeah, I think that would be
fun. This is
Grace for the chat.
I have a comment as well. I'll come to you next, Grace. I just wanted to point out that, you know, the whole idea of having the management interact with the staff and have meetings and have training goes a long way towards compliance.
True.
Because the way it works, you know, the staff gets an email, oh, the next fund drive is now, where's your premium? And then we only hear again, the next fund drive is now, where's your premium? So I think that the interaction that you're requiring is going to go a long way towards people actually even knowing what the guidelines are and being trained.
I think you're right about that. No, I think you're right. I'm glad you said it. When I ran the station in Baltimore, I implemented quarterly staff meetings with the 40 volunteers that we had there, and they were extremely useful in a number of ways. Number one, it created a culture of connectivity between the volunteers, the staff, and management. It really did create this setting where the volunteers really felt like the station was working on their behalf and they on behalf of the station, versus just being satellites, if you will, who show up for an hour and leave. It allowed us to deeply inform them about the fundraising process months in advance of the pledge drives. It allowed us to get everyone on the same page on programming initiatives. It allowed us to let them know of programming changes far in advance, to explain philosophically where we were in terms of programming, and share with them ratings analysis and understanding sort of radio station operations in a more intimate way, so that they felt not blindsided by news and information, but instead encouraged to take that information and use it to their advantage. And I think the proof's in the pudding. I mean, I've shared, you know, how great the performance at WEA in Baltimore improved under my leadership as a result of these kind of things. But the other thing I'll say is that, you know, I always see the volunteers as the tentacles for the station into the larger community. That's both physically, in the sense that, you know, once you leave the station, you go to your communities, you're able to spread the gospel of the station. But secondly, there's just a network of people, and with social media now, the capacity for the volunteers to bring so much more value to the station and vice versa, I think, is tenfold. And so I really see that this is an area of great need for us. I know that there's a lot of politics and factionalism, even amongst the PD's relationship sometimes with the volunteer staff. I've been to too many of the stations and seen how fractured those relationships are. I think it's important that as we move towards a more unified Pacifica, that this is one way to do that, and that is to get the PDs to regularly meet with these folks and share collectively where we're headed. And I think the development director should be a part of that, the GM should be a part of that, and any other members of the staff who can share vital information so that, again, the volunteers feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves.
Okay, Grace, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Yes. The programming committee put forward program evaluation criteria as policy. It was passed by the PNB in the spring of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was well thought out and considered very carefully. And we'd like to know, I as a national board member would like to know if and or when the program evaluation policy is going to be implemented at our stations.
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, it's before I got into this position. We've got two things kind of happening at the same time, right? We have policy that was approved by the board that needs to be implemented. We also have the acquisition of Meta and their role from an HR standpoint. And so there's this sort of balance that has to be, I think, made based on some of the best practices and tools and tactics that they can bring to the table in terms of implementing evaluation systems. And then there's looking at exactly what the board approved and trying to determine how to make both work so that we're, again, efficient and effective in our process. My concerns, and this has nothing to do with what was approved or even Meta, because, again, we're only at the beginning stages of really kind of understanding how all this will play together. But, you know, I'm always concerned with the capacity of our managers to do evaluation work. The constant narrative I hear, and I think you hear them too when you talk to the staff, is that they are heavily overburdened trying to do multiple jobs at the station. And to provide evaluations and to do it any more than annually, I think, is really difficult. I've made statements in the past, particularly with program directors. I think it's difficult to analyze the effectiveness of a program director on any sort of measurement other than annually. And I know that there's been proposals to do it on a quarterly basis. And I just think if you're going to judge a PD effectively, you have to have audience numbers. So not all of our stations have had audience numbers until recently. In fact, we are just now getting to the point where all five stations are subscribing to Radio Research Consortium audience data. We just hit that point last week, and it was because of an insistence on mine that the last station proceed with paying back debt, and the other station that wasn't doing it had to sign some documents just to be in the fold. So it's hard to evaluate your professionals when you don't have adequate measurement tools. I would argue the same could be said about people who are involved in fundraising. If you're employing really poor practices in your revenue centers with respect to membership drives, et cetera, how do you really evaluate them? If you're not providing professional development opportunities, how do you really evaluate the effectiveness of your professional teams? And so to me, one of the reasons why I'm so hardcore about these affinity group membership opportunities is I think the professional development has been one of the big sore spots lacking for Pacifica over the years. It's a point of emphasis as far as I'm concerned, and I think I've sold that pretty well to all the folks that I've spoken to on my tours of the stations. I think that all this has to happen in unison. I think we have to develop staff. We have to provide them with resources. We have to create an environment that allows them the time and energy to become better at what they do before we start being hypercritical of the work that they've either done or plan to do moving forward. So I know that doesn't completely answer your question. I don't think it does, Grace, other than to say, I'm aware that all these instruments are in place, but I think we have to understand that we've got a few variables at play here before we hardcore implement these regulations.
Can I follow up on this, Catherine?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Putting in clocks is fine, and forward promotion and all that kind of thing is great. However, the quality of the programming that's on the air on our stations is what's really, really important, because our listenership has been declining for quite some time. I don't think personally, and this is the programming committee, so it's proper to discuss this here. I don't think that we are going to improve the listenership of our stations simply by educating or enhancing the staff and programmers we have necessarily, because we could be we need to remove some of the programs or reorient some of the programming and improve the quality of the Pacifica programming, not bring in outside programming necessarily, although I'm not completely, or we're not completely opposed to that. But in order to improve the programming, one of the most important tools is to evaluate the individual programs. That is really the core of the program director's job. The program director is what are the program directors doing? It is their responsibility. This committee proposed a motion that was approved by the PMB to add to every program director's job description that they are responsible for increasing listenership at their station. Now, the LSBs have the power and duty to evaluate the program directors, and the main criteria is going to be, number one, has programming decreased or increased at their station under their tenure? Number two, have they implemented the program evaluation policy that we approved?
Grace, hold on. Repeat the first one.
This committee approved a motion in the fall of, in the spring of 2017, this is a separate motion from the program evaluation motion, to include in every program director's job description that it's their responsibility to improve the listenership of their stations. That's their responsibility. Now, the LSB has the power and duty to evaluate the general manager and the program director. One of the evaluation is, are they doing their job per their job description? And one of the main things that they're supposed to be doing is, number one, improving programming, and number two, evaluating the programming. So I don't know what the program directors are doing, but they should be doing their jobs, and part of your job is to make sure that board resolutions are implemented. And I don't think we're going to get out of this mess without improving the quality of our programming. And somebody has to listen to the programming and put...
Can I answer?
Let her finish, please.
Grace, are you done?
No, keep going.
No, I'm not finished.
Go ahead.
Go ahead and finish, please.
Okay. If you have in any organization, there are going to be high-performing staff, medium-performing staff, and poorly-performing staff. The first thing to do, in my opinion, is to evaluate. And the same thing with programming. In my opinion, the first thing to do is evaluate who are the staff who are underperforming to such a poor degree that they really should be removed. I mean, that's a difficult thing to do, but sometimes it has to be done. The other thing is who can be given training and help to improve their performance. And the other is how can the people who are high performers be supported? But it's a waste of time and money and effort to take staff who are woefully underperforming and invest in training and expensive training of them. And also, while they're not being either removed or demoted, some people are in jobs that are just beyond their capability, and they don't have to be necessarily laid off. They could be given a job more compatible with their capacity. But that's the first thing to do. And, and also with programming, the programming of our programming, the Pacifica brand is unique. We need to have our programming improved. We have some excellent, excellent, excellent programs across the network. And we also have some very mediocre programs that either need to be shortened, put in a less strategic time slot, or removed entirely. That process is absolutely necessary, and that's what's going to improve the programming. And we put forward and approved Pacifica policy, and the same thing that Ken also mentioned with the personnel handbook, those things the national board intends to be implemented. We want to see those things implemented. We want to see the programming evaluated fairly. If the programming is evaluated per our resolution that we passed and it's uniformly applied, it will mean that we have a fair process of removing programming, of enhancing programming, et cetera. So I don't know what the program directors are doing, but part of their job description is to improve listenership and to evaluate the programs. And we expect that as a board, as a national board, to be implemented by you, the executive director, and we expect that the program directors to implement those things, and they will be evaluated not by you necessarily. The program directors, per the bylaws, are evaluated by the local station boards, and the general manager is also evaluated by the local station board, of course, also by the executive director. So I would hope that you would take those policies seriously.
Okay, Grace, thank you. Go ahead, Maxie.
Yeah, first and foremost, to assume that none of this activity is going on is not ignorant, but negligent. Not only am I having these conversations with the PDs directly and the GMs, but they're having these conversations amongst themselves. Okay, so there is an ongoing effort to not only improve these PDs are constantly looking at their programs. They're listening to programs, local and national programs. They're constantly evaluating the performance during pledge drives, during those who have numbers are looking at the numbers. So this is constantly happening. So this notion that no one's doing any of this is wrong. So let's expunge that concept from this conversation. It's amazing to me how impatient members of our boards are. I've been here less than 7 months, okay, and been heavily involved in managing the election and working on the audit piece and trying to help with moving that whole piece forward, in addition to understanding the dynamic of Pacifica and trying to understand not only how this thing ticks, but who are the players that have made it go to this point in the system that we have currently. Understanding all the bylaws and how they work, dealing with the legal team. So all I'm saying is we're an under-resourced, understaffed operation to begin with. To think that everything's going to happen at the start of the starter pistol, I think is nonsense. This is all stuff that takes time. I just got done saying you cannot adequately evaluate a program director unless you've been able to look at a year's worth of programming. So if any LSB is making decisions on a program director based on one book or one quarter, that's fraudulent. And maybe the LSB doesn't know that because there's not enough professional expertise on a specific LSB to know that. So my role as executive director is not only to inform the PDs of best practices, but to work on informing the LSBs and the PMB on the proper way to evaluate a program director. And I would argue a general manager. It's one of the reasons, despite the bylaws, I have suggested that it might be useful for us to reverse the hiring process. Maybe the executive director should do the search and supply four candidates for PDs and four candidates for GMs to the local station board. That way, you're benefiting from all of the professional expertise I bring to the table versus an LSB that may have none, and you're getting a search that is professional and high quality versus one that might favor nativism, which is what happened in Houston, or other variables that have happened. There are underqualified people on our staff, no question. Who hired them? LSBs did, okay? It wasn't me. So let's be real fundamentally clear here. We are where we are because of decisions by the same group that wants these bylaws enforced, that hired these same people you're complaining about. So what I'm saying to you is, as a responsible and humane executive director, I'm not going to evaluate any of these people based on what they currently have as resources and what current situation they've been put into. You cannot program a station responsibly without audience numbers. It's ridiculous to think that you can. And yet we've got a station in Los Angeles, in Berkeley that doesn't have numbers. And we have a station in Washington, D.C. that didn't have numbers. New York just got their numbers. So I don't want to hear about responsibly programming or evaluating programs. You don't have numbers. It's all anecdotal. You have no clue if your shows are effective or programmed well. Okay? What we do know is 10 years ago the numbers were better, but we have no idea about programming that's going on right now in relationship to what was happening just a year ago, because very few of our stations have data that goes back even a year. So when you talk about evaluating programming, let's get off this bylaw kick. That's important. It's wonderful that you passed some bylaws, but let's also use some restraint and understand that we didn't have the systems in place to do the evaluation properly. I'm not going to be irresponsible in my executive directorship in evaluating the talent. The same thing goes for people involved with development. I know for a fact that the development tactics used by Pacifica are inadequate. Am I supposed to judge every development director, every general manager, because of the ineffective policies and procedures and practices that have become normal at Pacifica? Or do I say, no, let me educate them up. Let me provide them with access to tools, best practices. Let me expose them to a richer body of evidence on how to do this stuff effectively, and then evaluate their capacity to take it in, their willingness to learn something new, and their ability to implement new strategies. I think it's responsible on my part to give them everything they can have to succeed. Do I recognize that some people aren't adequately placed? Absolutely. I'm also trying to understand what is my course of action of either replacing people or demoting people or putting people in newer positions And do we even have the resources to replace them? Okay? Because you all know on this call that not one station's budget has been approved at the national level, to my knowledge. So, again, with all due respect, Grace, and all due respect to anyone else who's coming from this vantage point that bylaws have been passed and you've got to act, recognize that there's a little bit more nuance to this equation, okay? This is an organization that has been operating with poor practices in all phases of radio station operations for years, decades. This is nothing new. So for you to think that I'm going to roll out as a new executive director and play the game based on what's been happening here is absurd. I'm trying to move us forward into the 21st century of radio station operations, maintaining the ethos of Pacifica at the same time, respecting the bylaws, respecting the motions that have been passed, but recognizing that we've hired NEDA to help us with HR. We've hired them to help us with business financial management. And so I need to take advantage of them and utilize them to the fullest. That we've got a membership with Greater Public. I need to take advantage of that, utilize it to the fullest. I can go on and on. I'm going to shut it up there. But I just want to push back real quickly and just say, be patient. Recognize the context of everything and recognize that we are going to fix this model. This situation will become better. And some of it will be the acquisition of national programming that audiences know about and are attracted to. Some of it will be better promotion of existing programs. Some of it will be fine-tuning locally produced programming. Some of it will be working with our volunteers to help them know how to do programming better. All of these things are in the equation, but it takes time to roll out an effective approach to handling this stuff. It doesn't happen because someone thinks it's common knowledge.
Jim, to the stock.
Okay, Jim, your turn.
All right. Well, let me offer a bridging moment here. That is that, you know, my opinion about this stuff has been pretty well known for quite a long time, and I'm in the camp of both Grace and Maxie on this. I think that if we deal with this outside expert, this expertise thing, you raised a very interesting point in your discussions with the PDs, that some of them were sort of surprised or didn't know when you brought up the question of sound design. That I found very interesting. And that gets into how we could utilize. I mean, I'm not coming up with those resolutions or ideas out of, you know, like some grand poobah scheme. I know damn well that we got to work with the people in each signal area doing the most creative kinds of things, not only in sound design, because imagine what you could get if you go out to USC Film School or UCLA Film School or people who do soundtrack design. That was something that many of the better producers at the station I'm talking about in New York were into. But getting people in with the leadership of the local station saying this is good, to have people talk about things like that to the public, to our listeners, to an event or events where the producers are encouraged to participate. In other words, doing as much as possible a way to bring the station into the 21st century in terms of production of new media, and that means across the board, emphasizing audio, but creating a culture of creativity. I'm not saying that in some naive, hairy-fairy manner, because the culture of creativity is what always one reads about existed in the various stations in different time periods. And certainly now, it needs to be reinforced and reinstated precisely to bridge these problems, because I am totally with you on the issue of audience evaluation. I'd be, frankly, much more draconian about it. But I also know, in fairness, is that the evaluation process is a very difficult thing to do. It's not easy. It's a difficult process. And, you know, all the PDs, you yourself, I always say to them, you know, you're like dropped into the NBN through about 3 or 4 weeks before it falls. You're always in a constant crisis situation all the time. However, I think if we're trying to change situations locally at each station, and that includes all of them, because all their audience numbers stink, we have to sit there and say that what we do want to have with the producers is we want to also offer to the listener members a culture of creativity. In other words, a positive thing going on, and we actively act to create. It's not, and it has to be backed by local leadership, by management. I have no doubt I could get Bertolt to agree to this 100%. But this is the kind of thing that has to happen locally to all these stations, that they have to change the culture around, and it has to be one where, you know, the producers are not just, as Kathy said, they're being called upon to decide, okay, you got to make X money, and the only time anybody contacts them is in between that. There has to be the things that allow them to create their craft, that create other opportunities for people to come in. A few years ago, I went to a conference where Christopher Lydon was there, the person who's normally considered to be the person. He has a conversation up at MIT with another guy, and they create the term podcast. And Christopher Lydon, as Maxie knows and others know, is one of the better PRI hosts ever, frankly, who offered, by the way, his show. He offered his show to us at Pacifica for free. I persuaded him once to do that, and that nobody ever took advantage of. He felt that what would be a great thing is to be able to bring in kids, young kids, new talent, Generation Z types, and train them to do podcasting. And what is podcasting, really? It's just basically well-produced radio. So I personally think that that's the aim we have, to create a culture of creativity at each station that's open to all people. And that includes all the kind of things, experts, the oppressed, etc. And that's the kind of thing we have to do to revitalize Pacifica and make it a beacon, not a dead end, which is what it is now.
All right, anyone else for this
track? Catherine, Madam Chair, yeah, just FYI, we have 35 minutes remaining.
Okay. Anyone
Cliff,
else?
Cliff to the stack.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Maxie, speaking of going into this century, 21st century, now I realize I'm a retard in this. I've never been on the internet. I do not have a computer. But my granddaughter and daughter involved totally in Palestinian affairs. My granddaughter's half Palestinian. My granddaughter's even been interviewed on WPFW about her activism. But I know that neither of them ever listened to WPFW. And some people see the business of social media as being like, well, geo social media or radio. Well, to me, we have to get into social media, and our station the last year and a half has been getting so that people can listen to programs whenever they want rather than having to fix their schedule to what we put on. And I just think that a regular part of the programming committee, this one and at our local station, should be talking about the advances we have made in terms of getting onto social media. It's obvious that for the millennials and the young people, that is what they listen to. My granddaughter and daughter, they do not listen to radio, of any radio. Their whole lives are revolving around social media. And anyway, I just think that we ought to be sure that our stations are moving into that and putting their programming on so that all the young people can listen to what we're putting out there.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments. And the thing I'll add to that is I've got teenagers myself, 18 and 14. They never listen to the radio, despite the fact that their dad has been professionally in that career ever since they were born. So I feel you on that. What I will agree with you completely on is the value that social and viral media and marketing can bring to the table. It is definitely an area that we need to put a lot of focus on. I think Jim would agree. The wonderful thing about it is that people our age, I'm 52, your age, people literally in, I think, the more reasonable sweet spot for Pacifica listenership, which is probably, I would say, 35 to 65, are heavily utilizing social media. They're listening to podcasts, and they're involved in absorbing new media delivery systems And they're actually where the growth opportunity is now. And so we don't have to chase young kids and all that, even though it's important to get them in the mix, but we don't have to chase them. Bringing social and viral media and marketing to the table would benefit the audiences that we are already serving and need to serve better, I would argue. So great point. Certainly an area that I would like to put focus on. I will tell you the pushback you're going to get locally at the station level is how do they find the time and energy to do that? And so the key is training our volunteer staff that do so much of the bulk of our programming on how they can do social media and viral marketing of their own programs, doing it in a way that speaks as them being part of Pacifica. So it's sort of a mesh of the stations, even at the national level, creating a branding, a branding or an identifier of Pacifica content in these social media environments, and then allowing our volunteer programmers to utilize those tools to get their content out there. And that's everything from, you know, creating hashtags and making sure that we're using them across all the work that we put in social media, to recognizing that instead of creating websites or blogs and vlogs, the new game is making sure that you have presence on Facebook and YouTube, the places where people already are. How can you market in Twitter? And so it's really taking advantage of those big three, quite frankly, despite all the alternatives. That's really how you get the energy with respect to social media. So great points. Appreciate you for that.
Anyone else comment or question for the stack?
Yeah, Tom, yeah, for sure.
And Jim.
Tom, go ahead, and then Jim.
Yeah, I started listening to KPFA in 1954 when I was still in junior high school. And I started listening because that's where I could really find out in some depth what was really going on in the world. And, I mean, seriously, Pacifica and KPFA doesn't really do that anymore, you know, except for, you know, canned stuff and from commercial news services, mostly. They do a little bit, but not near as much as what we used to have a huge listenership for. So to bring that back, I think we need to bring back FSRM, which was our latest attempt at trying to pull news out of the rest of the world that you didn't get anywhere else. And to bring our membership back, I think that's got to be part of our programming. That's all I have to say.
That's a great point. I think it's a point of emphasis. I know that the board is hoping that I will deliver on the promise of national programming. They know that I have that in my background. But what I will say is national programming is expensive and often not profitable. So you better have a serious financial setup to be able to do that.
FSRN used to cost about $100,000 a month, if I remember correctly.
Exactly. Right. So right now, once we get our financials in order and the audit process, once our financial management systems are better in place, and more importantly, once we begin to have more reliable revenue streams coming into our stations, I feel like we'll be able to start producing national programming again that will strip across our schedules and be reliable, consistent, and predictable, and highly favorable to our audiences and the ones we want to serve. Once we're in a position to do that, we can implement that across the network. We have got five incredible markets to serve in addition to all of the affiliates that are spread throughout the Midwest and the rest of the center of America to benefit from. And I have no doubt, as we become more financially healthy and can afford to produce this kind of program, that we'll do that and we'll engage all the social marketing and viral marketing, social media strategies to push it into the new realm of progressive demographics. And I say that deliberately because I think one of the reasons why we've lost our fire, if you will, as a network, is because I'm not sure we have adopted to the next generation of progressive movements. When you look at the people who do shows on our air, I'm not sure they are the ones who reflect the very progressive movements that are happening around the country and across the globe. And so the question is, are we doing the right community engagement work to ensure that we're, number one, aware of the needs, wants, and aspirations of the progressive communities in our own backyards? But secondly, are we connected strategically with the right individuals and organizations so that we not only have the pulse, but can get them on the air to talk about these things in a way that is useful for our audience that we intend to reach? So all that is a process that will unravel as we become healthier financially and more stable in terms of our resources.
Okay, thank you. Anyone for the staff?
Yeah, I wanted to say something.
Oh, right, Jim, sorry, go ahead.
Well, does someone want to go ahead of me?
Is there anyone who hasn't spoken?
I thought I heard Ken.
Ken? All right, so Jim, go ahead. We still have a few minutes if you leave a little time for them. Who was that, Eric?
I'm fine, Catherine. Thanks. Go ahead.
Okay. All right.
Well, leave some time,
Jim, for Eric.
No, I'm good.
Are you good? Okay.
All right. One of the reasons why I felt that the idea coming out of Berkeley to do the May Day television stuff is a good idea is that's precisely the kinds of initiatives that we should be encouraging, albeit whatever kind of local political nonsense goes on in Berkeley about the people involved. I don't really care, because I think that the key idea is to us to break into doing these kind of things, to enter the 21st century. I look at how social media, I was watching something and how Beto O'Rourke was using social media to increase his visibility, doing a road trip with a Republican congressman in Texas to get hundreds of thousands of people watching. And we're looking at what Alejandro Ocasio-Cortez does. This is, you know, we're just simply behind the eight ball on that. And I spent a lot of time last year trying to persuade the indivisible groups here in New York. And I have no problem with the fact that we might have people from the RCP or WWP doing shows on Pacifica. That is right to have. On the other hand, here we have a vast group that basically was one of the groups responsible for creating the Democratic majority in the House of Representatives. And whatever people say about what they may think about working in the bourgeois liberal democratic system, at least it's put a restraint on Mr. Trump. So to ignore the kind of things going on in that kind of vein, I mean, these are mass movements. These are movements that have grown up spontaneously in opposition to Trump. And to just sort of walk away from that, to me, is ridiculous. And frankly, you know, they don't need us. They can develop their own media. That's one of the advantages of social media. They just don't need us anymore. And that's where we're making a mistake. Not, you know, reaching out to them and incorporating those kind of things, the kind of things we do. And I just think that, you know, there are enough young producers in these different shows. I'm sure a lot of the younger producers are experimenting across platforms in different stations. Today I talked to somebody who has those skills who just came into the station, and it's great that to be encouraged. So I think there's a lot of capability that is bubbling up from below in each of these stations, and that just has to be allowed to express itself. And I go back to the creativity thing. Pacifica stations always were hotbeds of creativity in the best way they operate. And that, I think, is something that has to, again, be put into the focus as the main objective. Because this way, you know, you can bring in all these extra people, and from the universities and from the different resources that we have in the city that we're in, and that can trickle into what we're doing. And that's the whole point, to make an exciting environment so people learn and grow.
Don't disagree at all, especially the macro aspects of it, the micro, how we actually fundamentally do it is the question mark. But I don't disagree with you.
My problem is local leadership that never wanted to do these things, where they thwart it, and that's where we get screwed up.
Who's that, Jim? Okay. Yeah. Anyone else for the stack? would like to comment or question?
Cliff to the stack.
Go ahead, Cliff.
I don't mean to interfere with the May 1st thing that you all are planning, which I think is great, but I think we ought to understand this is the biggest holiday on Earth every year, more so than Ramadan, than Christmas, than anything else, even bigger than New Year's. Perhaps New Year's is the only one that's equivalent. Only two or three countries do not recognize May Day as Workers' Day. All of Africa, all of Asia, all of Europe, all of Latin America. And every year, personally, from May 1st to May 2nd, I follow the news because every year stuff happens around the world, both officially and unofficially. Workers take advantage of May Day. So it seemed like a great idea on your celebration of May Day would be on the hour, every hour for that 24 hours, to tell what's happened the previous hour, say beginning in Australia with the time zone and going around the world with May Day. I just think it'd be exciting because almost every year all kinds of stuff happens on May Day.
Brilliant idea.
Could Maxie?
I like that a lot.
Quincy, I mean that kind, that understanding.
Did I do what? I'm sorry.
Can you get the that understanding that was just expressed? Can you get that? Can you get Quincy to understand that? I mean that's where the resistance is coming from at this point.
Yeah, well, let me say this, and not so much in defense of Quincy, but this is just sort of my cursory understanding of the network effect, even with Pacifica stations from a programming standpoint. There is a very serious disconnect with stations cooperating. We have D.C. and New York that works together. We have L.A. and Berkeley that work together, but very few working together across the country. It just seems like, I mean, whether it's an election special, whether it's May Day, whether it's the women's movement, International Women's Day, there's always this sort of fractured approach to our stations working together. So this is one of those things we talked about earlier about a cultural issue. We have, you talk about the politics at the LSB level. It plays out on the ground with the stations. And I'm going to say this pointedly because I think it needs to be said. You know, I think that there is, in some respects, and this comes through the business managers, this comes through not so much the GMs, but the business managers for sure. There is this chip on the shoulder because of recent history around the way financial things have been handled in this organization that has created divisions that permeate conversations, whether they be on conference calls, whether they be in person, that become areas of division. And, you know, part of the cultural dynamic here is trying to get people to realize that sometimes you got to just let some of that stuff go. Let's park it somewhere in the rear. Let's deal with now and try to find resolution for that old issue at a later date. But let's still continue to work forward. So this cultural change that I think has been articulated on a number of occasions on this call tonight is very real. And I recognize it as an issue we've got to get beyond. Someone in our programming call today mentioned that I should institute must carry rules on some of the programming. And they were talking about things just like May Day. They were talking about things like International Women's Day and things like that. These are mandatory must carry situations. I am a little hesitant to go in that direction because I feel like the stations on a local level should be able to make informed decisions about what works best in their market. But because we are a network, because we are Pacifica, you would hope that there would be strong engagement around central themes that we can all share in because the collective assets make the content compelling. Because working together, we can be bigger than we are as individual stations, but we haven't gotten to that point yet. So it's a work in progress. I certainly feel and have a lot of respect for Quincy. He's one of the few executive directors, general managers that we have who has legitimate, really strong radio management credentials and including in production and programming. The other managers have areas that they accentuate value in. But he's one of the few that we have that really is a radio guy. And so I do respect him, but I understand your concern. the key with him and with others in our system, and I shouldn't be speaking about anyone in particular necessarily on this public call, but the key is even if someone brings that background to the table, there's still this sort of inoculation or this acculturation into the Pacifica ethos, understanding the values that we have. And that's one of the pieces that I think this board could be instrumental in communicating. It's probably one of the things that we have lost because we don't have in-person meetings in the way that we should. But, yeah, I don't want to keep going on, but I get your point, and I certainly will do my part to develop this culture of cooperation and the network effect.
I have a question. This is Catherine, and we're running out of time, but I'll go to Ken. So is there – I think that everyone on this committee, not everyone, but the majority of us want to see this May Day expression happen. We're kind of at a juncture where it's going to be hard for us to do it at the board level. Is there something that you can do to make this happen as the executive director instead of yet again another opportunity being lost?
Yeah, I think that the fundamental question we have to ask ourselves is this something that should be mandatory for the stations to do? That's number one. If it is, and I'm not saying it isn't or shouldn't be, if it is, what is the requirement? Is it to carry everything that everyone's doing? Is it to fill a certain number of hours? Is it to accentuate the top of the hour? Is it just to have a legal ID that mentions that it's May Day? There's a lot of variables in how we can express May Day. The question is, do we have enough content across the network to make it compelling radio, to be content that is useful? We could do a whole lot of things that would be piss poor in execution and resource, et cetera.
But we're actually talking about a separate stream. I understood this to be a separate stream from
radio. Yeah, let
and
me address
so
that.
So it would be just a matter of promoting it and making people know that it's available.
Yeah, let me address that. I think it's very difficult to expect any of our stations to do an adequate job promoting an HD or web-based content. They don't promote what they do on the FM primary signal well enough. To assume that they're going to promote in a good way, in a productive and impactful way, what they're doing on an alternative channel, I think is even less. Think about how difficult it was if you had the promotion of our elections, the LSB election process. That was like pulling teeth with some of our stations. And so
we're running out of time, and I don't think you're getting my point. So I just want to say that this is a creative effort in which we have a group of volunteer producers who are in a training program in California. There's interest in New York. There's a capacity to do. We put this forth as a test case of collaboration of effort and learning experience on how it would be possible to do this. We have an opportunity with volunteers, with the streaming capacity, and all we ask for is that the station would put, run a PSA if possible, but to put a link to their on their website. So it's not like we're looking to win the marathon here. We just want to start the race.
Okay,
so just giving that context.
Okay. Forgive me for not understanding exactly what you're talking about. If that's the case, perhaps you can do a sidebar email with me to explain the details. I know some of this because it's come up in past conversations, but not to the intimacy that is necessary to leverage my position with the PDs and GMs. So if anyone on this call would be inclined to do that, or at least get me in touch with whoever's guiding this project, then I can try my best to assist in the process. I've pitched programming options in the past to the PDs. I can certainly do it with this as well.
And I think that's the best that your best come from me as the chair of this committee rather than someone who is involved in some local nonsense.
So I would like to put it forth
as from the committee, and I'll just get the information from the people involved.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, Ken.
Yeah. And Tom can tell you that the apprentice group is already in the progress of putting this together, pulling in inputs from several affiliate stations across the country. That's the video streaming inputs, and they're in the process of putting that together. So all we need is the cooperation of the of management, and I think we're going to have it ready to go.
Okay. Jim Dustock, to assisting.
Thank you. Who was the last one, Ken?
Jim Dustock.
Jim, okay.
Yeah,
I think we're out of time, so please be very quickly.
All right. You know, these are models to have the break through the parochialism that you mentioned, that you've discovered in your seventh-month voyage through all this. Because this is the kind of thing, you know, they haven't paid attention to content questions for several decades. I would argue that that's at the national level. And that's the role of this committee, to pay attention to that. Because that's what we sell, that's where our money comes in. And to me, it's no big deal, relatively speaking, to put on a side of each website of each station, here is access to this programming on International Women's Day that's happening in New York. If you want to hear it, good. Here's access to Women's Day programming happening in PFW, et cetera, and start to do that on a regular basis. That is, here you could listen to this programming if you want, in addition to what we're doing now. If these guys want to go do the video stuff, cool, let them do it. And just to encourage to break down the parochialism, because the parochialism is in fact due to the fact that the content issue has never been called and thought about. That to me is the fundamental reason why you hear the parochialism, because that's where the money comes from, and that's where it all breaks down over the money. So to me, it's no big deal to do this. You should, a leader has to lead. It's like at Fort Benning, Georgia, when a guy says, follow me. You got to sit there and go over the top first and lead.
Yep. Quick question. This campaign, has anyone put together the web assets that would be, quote unquote, easy to put up on your website? Is that something that we're depending on each station to build on their own?
No, we're not depending on them to do that. the people that are putting this together have all of that equipment or to borrow it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm talking specifically about promotion material, like the banners that would be on the side of a website or language that would be communicated on a website, to promote the fact that this is available.
I assume that they're working on that.
Okay. The sooner that's available, the greater the promotional opportunity. And that's something, you know, again, that's why I said earlier, you know, we can create all kinds of great stuff, but if we don't do it in the most effective manner, it may not get the impact that we're looking for. I think this is a great initiative. I'm all for it. And I want to do my part in promoting the stations adhering to taking advantage of making this available to our listenership. But we also need to make this as turnkey as possible for staff that are overloaded and could benefit if this is easily made customer, if you will, turnkey for them to turn into promotional material.
Well, what wraps around May Day is a pre-planned online fund drive, is my understanding. And the two of them can be integrated together so that they promote each other.
Okay.
Okay, so let's maybe Tom, you and I could talk to you offline so that I can get the details for this presentation in combination with what you're offering. But we are out of time for this meeting, I do believe, Eric. Is that true?
We've actually got about 8 minutes left, and let's get
cool.
7 minutes.
Excellent.
Can we do that tomorrow, Catherine?
When?
I say tomorrow. Can we do that offline?
Yeah, let's do it offline tomorrow. All right.
And
so
if you need to pull me in, Catherine, if you all need to pull me in, just give me a heads up, and I'll join you if I can be of assistance.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. That'd be great.
This is Grace. I'd like to adjourn.
Okay. Catherine, thanks. Thank you so much for your stewardship. Cliff, welcome back. Cliff, I don't know if you got a chance to take a look at the Green Book, but give me your thoughts. Grace, Jim, I hate calling names because I always leave somebody out. I may be at the next meeting. I don't know, but it's been great. Thanks for having me again.
Are you still on the LSV? Eric?
You know, the situation is fluid. Depending who you talk to, I am. I haven't gotten a memo yet. I don't know what's going on, but conceivably I might be on this next call, but
okay.
If I had to call somebody on Wall Street, they'll say this is it.
All right, we'll see how that goes, but in either case, unless there's any objection, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you,
everybody.
That's why you guys didn't get to the left.